Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Hello and welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and my sidekick once again this show is Mr. Dan DuBose, CPA. Dan, you've already joined us, I trust.
I am here. Good morning.
Very good. And yes, it is a good morning. And boy, has it been a busy week in the news when it comes to commercial real estate. We've got quite a few articles posted out on the BAPlannerShow.com site under the resources link. I don't know, at least a dozen or more this week, Dan. It's like I started cutting and pasting links and just kept going. It's like there were so many good articles illustrating some of the asset types that we reference on the air, and refinancing news and acquisition news, disposition news. We got it coming from all sides. But in any event,
it's quite an active screen today.
I'm sorry, say again?
It's quite an active screen today, the resource page.
Well,
Be a Punisher.
It is, but boy, it's a mixed bag, and that's what some of these articles show, and I was careful to not just pick the good news, because we all know there is bad news right now. But let me get our disclaimer out of the way, Dan, and then we'll be on our way. For those that have listened to the show before, you know every week we're careful to remind you that just because you hear of a project or a strategy, a tax law rule, etc., make sure you understand how it fits your facts and circumstances. Consult with your existing advisors. If you don't have any, or you don't have any that understand these topics, which that's possible because this is very much a niche area, feel free to go to our website at BAPlanner.com. You'll note that's different than the BAPlannerShow.com, which is a companion site. Actually, you can get to the forms from either site, but you might as well just go directly to BAPlanner.com. That's BEAPLANNER. And you'll see at the top of the page a link to forms. And if you will fill out those intake forms, we would really love to get the first three for sure. I guess step one, two, and three. But even if we just get step one, it'll give us some information where we can try to ascertain whether we can help you with your objectives. But we are planners. We will also serve as a reporter if you care to have us do your tax reporting. But you know, there's a lot of reporters out there, and very few planners, and there's even fewer that work in the niche we do with real estate private partnership syndications. So bottom line is, talk to your existing advisors. If they can help you, great. If not, you've got a plan B, or at least a potential plan B. If you'll fill out the intake form so that we can tell a little bit about you or your background, your family's makeup, et cetera, so we can make sure the planning strategies that we have to deploy would provide value. Dan, let's go to the news. You want to pick an article? I like the one you forwarded me this week about recession. Do you want to talk about that one maybe as a place to jump off?
Yeah, the this is from the Mises Institute, M-I-S-E-S, and this is talking about why recession has not effectively showing up in the numbers that we see so much, and they're blaming it mostly on government spending again. As the article mentions, it's bloated government spending. You know, the debt is increasing across the international governments. Internationally, governments are spending, I think that the number they threw out was 3% increase over prior years. So when you talk about a government spending more, it covers what the individual or the small businesses might not be spending. So it's saying that there's really a recession, let's call it in quotes, I'm going to say end quote, recession at the personal level, but the government spending is covering it. It's bloated. They're spending too much money. Their debt is increasing, and we've seen that certainly in our country. You know, in Argentina, the article mentioned there's a, you know, inflation is 108% in Argentina. Of course, they grappled with that all its life. You know, it seems like they've always had a problem with inflation because they do not control their spending nearly as much as we in the U.S. supposedly control ours. So it's, you know, we're in good shape is what they're saying, but with what's happening here simply because of the government spending. And is it true? I don't know. I do know that we are spending a lot of money, in the years leading up or during the COVID days, we were running a big deficit. You know, we're still there. You know, the new budget just allowed the government to spend no more than 1% increases over the next 2 years. And effectively, whatever it is what it is. You know, that's what they said about the debt limit when we had that battle going on. Whatever it is what it is. We're not even going to try to control it for the next 2 years anyway. I guess that gets us past the next election. Maybe that's what that was
right.
All about.
That's right. Well, I wonder how soon before we factor in the lack of the student loan bailout program, although they're not giving up on that. They've made that very clear. And I tell you, it seemed like such a simple scenario where we knew, even Nancy Pelosi understood that the president couldn't do what he did, right? So, I mean, how much more simple could it be? But in any event, I also would note that there's no way the cost was going to be as low as even CBO said it was. And by the way, Dan, what happens in those situations? I'm just curious. When they project it's X and it ends up being X times 3, do we still shell out the bucks for it because it's the law at that point? Or how does that work exactly? There's no hard budget stop, is there?
There is really no hard budget stop. That's right. You know, as we've reported before, the U.S. reports on a cash basis anyway, so whatever it spends is whatever it spends. If it needs more money, we just go print it. We make it.
Yeah,
we sell it.
Yeah, and speaking – I'm sorry, Dan. I was just going to point out before you kept going on that topic. Speaking of the government's accounting methods, we do have an article – in our news section. It's actually worked its way down to the archives section, and I was going to look here and see what the episode number that here it is. It was the episode 202 or June 4th of 2023. The debt ceiling debate begins and ends with accounting standards. And that's a Truth in Accounting article. And I don't know how many non-accountants will actually enjoy reading that. I kind of enjoyed it because I've really never understood. I assumed it was accrual, to be quite frank. And I guess part of it, explain it, Dan. I interrupted you. Maybe you were heading there. Explain in general how that happens.
Well, the difference between accrual and cash?
Well, no, the difference in which pieces or components. I think it's a little both, is it not?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In the accounting world, we call that the modified accounting system. And it's whatever it needs to be is what it comes down
yeah.
to.
Yeah. I know a lot of syndicators that use that method as well.
Yeah, we have to ferret those out, don't we?
Well, they call it hybrid, you know. It's like in fact, one of the mentor platforms in town, or at least in Houston, I guess I keep forgetting we're playing these shows around the country now, they talk about the modified accrual method where, you know, basically they don't report their revenues on the accrual method. Not that it really matters too much, and at least you hope it doesn't if you're running the property on the revenue side, right? I mean, most rents get collected certainly before the end of the month. You know, rents are due on the first. Typically, they're late on the third. You're filing evictions on the fifth is the rule we always lived by when I had evictable units. Now, with corporate housing, short-term rental, there's no such thing because we get access. Well, we can take our own eviction steps right away because it's not a typical 12-month lease landlord tenant relationship. But anyway, that's another story. But in any event, you hope you've collected your rent within the 30 days before the accruing of revenues would matter. But then on the expense side, well, they're cash method on that, you know, or actually they're accrual method on that. They're going to take everything they can get to, right? And I've always doubted whether or not that would be allowable, but I suppose as long as it's like many things under the code, as long as you consistently apply whatever method of accounting you're conflating, you'll probably be okay, right?
But, consistency does a lot to help you. That's exactly right, Nate.
Yeah. Well, in any event, I interrupted you. I don't know if you lost your train of thought, but you were on to something that was probably sage advice on the topic of the way the government gets away with accounting. But
well, you know, it's just the fact that, you know, if they need money, they just go get some more paper and ink and start making it. You know,
I was going to say, you know, we had the balanced budget amendment somewhere back in the day. Where was that? In the 90s, I think.
Yeah, 25 years.
Yeah, and I don't remember hearing two references to that since the day it passed. Now, again, I'm old, but usually my long-term memory works better than my short-term memory, right? So, anyway, and by the way, Dan, you'll be happy to know I had an ultrasound done this week on my neck on up, and no plaque in those arteries. It was amazing. Even the neurologist, I think, was impressed or surprised, one of the two, probably both. But in any event, I think that has no impact on my short-term memory struggles that I think is just part of being old. But anyway, Dan, let's see. I wanted to pick a couple other articles. Oh, I found this remarkable, if nothing else, for the size, that the very first article on our list is one about a $947 million. That's $1 billion, close to it. That was it a refinance? I believe it was, right?
Yeah,
Dan?
Refinance.
On a 4,249-unit property. It's the West Coast largest apartment complex in L.A. And that's, I mean, even in today's times, and in fact, there was a quote somewhere in this article about even in turbulent times, there's financing for quality projects and quality operators. And not to mention, they got a 10-year fixed rate loan. on that refi. Pretty impressive, wouldn't you say, Dan?
Very impressive, I think. And it was it not a agency loan? It's a Freddie Mac loan, I believe.
Well, I believe it was. I got off the article, but I would almost think it would have to be, right?
Have to be. They don't mention any details on it, though, but I think, you know, if you can get an agency loan for 10 years these days, particularly when you got $1 billion, call it, you know, that's significant. That'll get somebody's attention. Who did they peddle that off to, though? Man, that's just tremendous dollars.
It is. It really is. But it may be something that I'm sure they had multiple participations, I guess we call that, on that loan. That couldn't have been all one lender, one. I wouldn't think. But anyway, let's see. What else? We've got so many good ones to talk about. Dan, tell me which one suits your fancy. I'll let you pick.
Is recourse still that scary? Recourse lending really that scary?
Yeah, that's a good article, too. Let's do this, though. I just realized we're right at the break, a little bit over. Let's go ahead and take a break for a few minutes. We'll be back with more of the Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and my guest, Dan DuBose.
With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan@npross.com. Nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
With big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back to more of the Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I'm here today with Dan DuBose, CPA, once again. And we were just talking about some news articles. If you have questions and want us to address them, perhaps real time, depends on the topic, we may do it on the air, but odds are we'll circle back sometime during the week offline. But you're welcome to text me at 713-581-0195. 0195, and we'll try to assess it real time if I see that come in. Dan, we were starting to talk about the article concerning recourse versus non-recourse, and I guess we shouldn't just assume that everyone knows what the difference is, right? So you want to explain what a recourse versus a, in this case, it would be qualified non-recourse that's typically used in financing multifamily and other commercial real estate assets.
With recourse lending, you're signing up to be responsible for the debt if the property itself fails to make the payments or to honor the loan itself. With non-recourse, it's just the opposite. You don't have recourse. The property stands alone as the collateral for the property itself or for the purchase that you're making. Recourse can be good in that it makes the lender more comfortable. Maybe it might lower your interest rate. You could maybe get a little bit better interest rate if you've got somebody else that's got some skin in the game besides just the property itself. Some high net worth person could come on the paper with you to guarantee the lender that somebody's going to take it out. Otherwise, the property just stands alone.
And what we're talking about is on a recourse loan, assets beyond the original loan collateral. So let's assume you've got a dozen partners and two of them have significant balance sheets, meaning they have significant net worth that could serve in the guarantor role on the debt. And so what happens is, as long as everything's rolling along like the way you planned it, you got the rents coming in that are more than adequate to cover the debt service, then you got no issues. But let's assume something like COVID were to hit, and all of a sudden you lost some of your tenant base, you couldn't make the debt service payments, and now the lender has the option to proceed against one of the two, in this example, the two loan guarantors. And Dan, would they have to proceed against both of them, or could they pick the one that's got the fattest balance sheet?
Both of them, most likely.
Yeah, but they could go after one. They don't have to go after both guarantors. They could say, hey, this guy's an easier lawsuit, and if we win, he's got, Exxon stock or something really valuable in his net worth that would be easy for us to liquidate, right? And so, you know, most of our clients would never go into a transaction understanding that they were signing a personal loan guarantee. And I tell every client, if you even see the word anywhere in your subscription agreement, just stop and let's talk, because that shouldn't be there unless it's talking about the syndicator and maybe someone else in the deal that's agreed to be the loan guarantor. And you typically won't see that on one of the syndication type structures that our clients are investing in. Those will be of the qualified non-recourse variety. And when somebody says, and this is kind of a misnomer I see in PPMs or private placement memorandums quite routinely, is syndicators talk as if their key principle, they're agreeing to operate in the key principle role, where they're one of several potential guarantors, but that's on a limited set of what we call the industry carve-outs. It's nefarious activities, typically, where, you know, the bookkeeper absconds with the money and goes to Tahiti or whatever, and then in that case, yes, the key principals have to make good on the loan. And so in any event, but to be true, or to be clear, it's rare on a syndication with 100 to 150 other partners and, you know, substantial companies that have been in the business. They've been to the finish line already. The current project is a quality asset. You know, trust me, the lender will have already crawled all over those assets, and if they're doing a qualified non-recourse, they're confident that that project will generate sufficient cash flows and a DSCR, et cetera. You should not ever see a recourse type loan structure. Dan, and let's say you're buying a small apartment building and you're a first time buyer, and you may have two or three other partners, but maybe they're all first time buyers, and maybe, you know, no one of you has a balance sheet that'll pay that, I don't know, $2 million loan back, let's call it. But let's assume you push through that, maybe all four of you, if that's what you have, are on the debt, but you were able to get the lender to agree that, hey, once we've performed at a certain level for a certain period of time, you agree to reduce that recourse obligation. Does that happen on occasion, Dan?
Yeah, or has that's it a really, yeah, a very good negotiating point going into making a deal, is it not? You know, where you can, if you got really good skills running this small apartment, you're going to increase the rent, you're going to increase the bottom line, you're going to decrease the debt possibly even faster than what was projected originally, yeah, or maybe even ahead of amortization if you have to.
And so when you do that, what are you really reducing? What's the big issue that makes that lender happy? You're reducing their risk, right? That they're going to get their money
their
back.
Risk. You're reducing
right.
their income
and so, yeah, so that's why they would be willing or perhaps willing. Right now in today's times, I don't think you're going to see much renegotiation on recourse indebtedness. I mean, I'm not saying it wouldn't happen. I'm just saying it likely in fact, I think this article even says that insurers, complete recourse burn-off is what we're talking about. And one of the parties that was interviewed for this article saying, I think this is very diplomatic, is less available in the current. These days is how they say it. These days, lenders are less willing to consider levels of burn down based on project performance. But again, one of the big issues that we constantly mention in answering the question why multifamily syndications or why private partnership syndications, you as the passive will never be in a position or shouldn't be where you have to worry about this issue. It's just non-existent. I mean, the key principal role, I don't care how much they're offering to pay someone the half point, maybe even 2% of the company's equity, it's not worth it. Why would you stick your neck out for a 1% fee, which would be ownership interest, be given to you, to risk, you know, multiple millions of dollars? It just doesn't fit your ownership level. And so don't do it is what I would tell you. I know it's tempting to get, you know, on a, let's call it a $40 million deal, 1% would be what, Dan, 400 grand, if I'm doing my math right?
Yes.
And I know that would be tempting, but let me tell you, if and when it ever were to occur, it would be a sad story, a sad day. So anyway. Okay, well, enough about recourse versus non-recourse. Let's see. Well, just in passing, I wanted to point out that a couple of the articles this week involve the industrial asset class and self-storage. And I just wanted to point out, you know, we obsess pretty much on the multifamily space, but boy, there's a lot of good stories right now in the self-storage market as well as industrial, and we put a couple of them on the list of articles, and I think one of them had, what was it, Dan, like an 80% or 88% IRR. And
yeah, that's the reason the life insurance companies like to jump on them, because it has great cash flow, internal rate of return. You know, it's an amazing thing. The self-storage, it seems like, our industrial, even in Houston right now, has just gone nuts around this area. It's just the
It's happening all over. In fact, it was an industrial property in Philadelphia area that had a return, an internal rate of return of 80%, and that comes on the heels. The same company did a 300,000 square foot derelict former subway repair facility in South Philly that they leased the remodeled space to Amazon. It had an IRR of 200% in only 15 months. And so again, it's like multifamily. If you get a sponsor or syndicator that knows what they're doing, can identify the asset that with their changes will have above average value, rates of rental income, sell or refinance your equity out, and that works similar to apartments. It's different tenant types, obviously, and different set of math metrics, but those are two areas that I know we've talked about discussing more and more, and I think, you know, now's the time. What other articles, Dan, are of note that you think we should mention before we take our next break, and then we come back and talk about a current syndication offering or two?
You know, we talked a little bit in the past about build to rent, you know, not multifamily as such, not, you know, buildings on top of, or units on top of units or whatever, but building single family homes effectively for, but build them to rent only. You know, we're seeing some in Houston area, seeing some infill, even where the people or the investor, the group is building maybe on a, you know, within a subdivision of where they're tearing down houses and putting up new homes to rent, or maybe putting up, maybe taking that lot and divided it into four. You know, got some, you know, not necessarily quadplexes, but townhomes or, you know, rental properties that are similar or like townhomes, which I, you know, is a new and upcoming thing. But there's been some, you know, in Austin area, they had a recently, we talked about a, I think it was a 250 units or something like that. It was a huge property that they were going to use to build for build to rent only. That's
single. Was that single family in Austin, or was that a townhome?
Yeah, Austin or Bastrop, yeah. Somewhere in that area. You know, Tesla driving a lot of that over there. Just,
yeah,
you know,
you bet.
You know, that's becoming a huge metroplex nowadays. That whole area.
Yeah, that's true.
Austin these days.
Yeah. Let's talk again real quick. Last article, and I don't know, have you already read the one about which city is renter's newest top destination? You want to guess what it is? If okay, good. So you want to guess which city that might be? I'll promise you'll never guess it.
Jackson, Mississippi.
No, but that you know, that's not a bad guess. Charleston, South Carolina represents the first choice for where renters want to live in 2023, according to the GlobeStreet.com ALM site. I forget what that stands for, but great site for keeping up with what's going on in multiple asset classes. And here are the reasons. Has a bustling port, has come to be associated with a growing IT hub. Who would have guessed it? Due to more than 250 tech companies located there, or with operations there. They also like the feeling of living in a big city without compromising the air quality or natural amenities. The size of Charleston apartments is also larger at 967 square feet than the national average. I don't know if that's one bedroom, two bedroom. Could be either if it were in Houston or San Antonio. Says the national average is 887 square feet in 2022. The food scene in this southern city is also attracting attention on many foodies' lists, especially as restaurants have updated their interpretation of southern cuisine. I'm not sure what that means. Is that a slight of the Houston? Say again?
Fried chicken and mashed potatoes there.
Well, no good Tex-Mex, I can almost promise you, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But lest you think the Houston area didn't rate, you probably also won't guess this, Mr. DuBose. What city in the Houston area might you think would come in number nine, or actually first for cost of living and housing, for a total ranking of ninth?
Cypress?
No, not too far. Conroe, 40 miles north of Houston, scored very high. So I was thinking something. Surely Houston has to be there somewhere, but I did not see that. What do you think the worst might be for living and housing? I think
Los
you might
Angeles,
get this
California.
One. No, New York City. So anyway, okay, well, we're at our second break time. Let's take our second break. We'll come back and get into a couple syndication metrics, math metrics, when we return. And we'll be back with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and today's guest, Dan DuBose, CPA.
I am a seeker, and you are a teacher. You are a reacher, so reach down. Reach out and lead me. Guide me and keep me in the shelter of your care each day.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't.
Welcome back for the final segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and my guest, Dan Dubose, CPA. Dan, let's turn our attention now to a transaction or two and kind of break down some of the math that we're seeing. A couple of really attractive opportunities out there. Which one did you want to talk about, the conversion project up north? Is that your...
I think there's one that caught my eye. It was in Wilkie Mogul.
Okay.
It's a hotel in, of all places, Detroit, Michigan, which, you know, we hear about how junky it's become, but it sure sounds like this is an intriguing deal in that it's built in 1924, operated as a hotel until the 1960s, and now some brave souls come along and decided to convert it to apartments. I think it's 179-180 units, something like that. It's paying very little money for it, getting some good credits from the city for taxes and such, getting some good financing on it, and is capitalizing it, you know, cap rate at 5.5%, and still throwing off some very good earnings. It's a $35,000 minimum, which I think is significant, raising what's the amount? $25 million.
I was just looking at the deal docs. I'm trying to pull them up. Anyway.
It may have some rather high fees going into it. It looks like there's some fees that are leveled out at or they're not based on hard dollars necessarily, but it's still a lot of fee in it. There's, you know, they're buying it so inexpensively, I think, because they just, you know, need to get this thing cleaned up, looking good, because it's right down, as I understand.
It's only, by the way, put that in real numbers, $79,412 is the acquisition, but did you see the development budget? And
yes.
This kind of, yeah, almost $20 million. It kind of puts in perspective how a transition is going to cost more to undertake than the typical already in place multifamily purchase. But I will say this, if you're going to do it, I haven't looked at enough of these transactions to get the metrics in my wheelhouse, but it would seem to me converting a hotel would be a lot better than converting the classic office space. But then again, if you already own the classic office space, we didn't mention the article on the website for this week, but apparently there's predictions that the office market will not return. I don't know, the normal's the right word, but that's how I read it. Until when? Did you see that, Dan? It's in the headline.
2040.
That's
15 years.
That's crazy. And so if you already own one of those buildings on California Avenue in San Fran, as an example, you may be thinking, well, you know, it's not more expensive when you compare my alternative right now. I mean, when you've got buildings that last sold in the 300 to 350 million range that are selling for 60, how much more would it take in conversion costs? Of course, it's still going to, unless you're moving the building as part of that conversion, you still got the relative same problem you got now, which is nobody wants to come to your part of town, basically, right? So,
yeah, that's why
anyway,
those two hotels in San Francisco closed, what, a couple of weeks ago, too, we mentioned.
Well, and multiple upscale malls, et cetera.
Yeah.
Let's go back to this transaction. So, the exit cap rate at 5.5% is probably, well, I don't know. It's not low and it's not high that we think. Of course, the problem is nobody knows. And, you know, I see a lot of optimism that we may see a light at the end of the tunnel on rate increases. I'm not so sure of that. I can't see. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, and I know nobody else does either. And this current situation we're in is so different than those that precede it in terms of the other variables going on in the economy. But anyway, go ahead, Dan. What's the financing look like on this thing?
They're looking at a 5-year hold. They have a fixed rate of 4.5%. Sorry, I don't have that in front of me. I thought I did. I had it written down here.
Well, I mean, what you've got going for you, it's historic. It's being repositioned as a Class A in a prime location. It's got a competitive edge over new Class A, apparently, from a construction cost standpoint. And the rents won't have to be as high, which should allow them to maintain lower occupancy. And I'm trying to think. They're going to have a lot of studio units, which that makes sense. And I know, like we did in San Antonio with our boutique hotels, we have studios, and we connect them to the units on either side with pass-through doors. So they could do that. So you could still buy a quote, two-bedroom that's made up of two studios, theoretically. And so I like the model. I'm just not sure. I mean, I haven't really torn apart any of these transition projects where I can tell you they make sense at the end of the day, although this one caught our eye because it seemed like it might. Now, that said, we haven't looked at how much dilution each of your dollars undergoes by the time you cover the fees, et cetera. Did you notice what the fees were, Dan, exactly?
Yeah, there's as you mentioned earlier, the CapEx is rather high at $20 million round numbers, and they've got a 3% construction fee. They have a 2% of hard costs, and they're calling it 2% of hard costs on acquisition and such as that. I think that was the.
So that'd be the total of those two added together?
Yeah. So there's some significant fees, but
That's okay. I guess the fees sound rich, but it's all relative. And again, we haven't looked at this for a client yet, or we would have some of these numbers in our head. But I would tell you, and by the way, the debt, let's see here. It looks like there's $21.3 million, a mezz loan. There's a senior loan of $21.5 million, a mezz loan of $3.7 million, and preferred equity of $9.6 million. That's a bank that's participating and a pension fund. I guess the mezz loan is the bank. The pension fund has the preferred equity. But in any event, that's a lot of hands in the till, and I'm sure those are getting preferred payouts. Effectively, they're like a debt service, I'm pretty sure, or I would think they would be. They plan to refinance in month 36, assuming they hit a 71% LTV, which I would say in today's market, it would be possible, but I don't know that I would call it probable. What do you think, Dan? If they were sitting here today and they had performed, got the occupancy up to a level of, 90%? I think they could probably get a 71% LTV.
Yeah.
But
they're looking at a 2.5 EMX. So, you know, in that 36 months, because that's with a refinance at that 36-month level, too.
Yeah. Well, that's not bad in today's market. So I guess 20.6% IRR. But, again, these are project-level returns, I believe. It says projected returns to investors, but I doubt seriously 20.6 is to the passive. So I think that's probably includes the private equity folks as well. Yeah. Well, Dan, we're at the end of the show again. I guess we'll have to leave it at one deal this week. We can always pick up next week and discuss some of the others we had on our list. But as usual, enjoyed it. I'm glad you were able to join us. And for all of you listening out there, we hope you'll join us again this time next week. And we'll have, I'm sure, a lot more news. And everything's either good or bad. And, again, I'll try to keep putting some of both up on the site. And then also we're going to add some topical type articles that we'll use to help educate very soon. But anyway, okay, well, thanks again, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week. Same time, same station.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.